Just after 1:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can also listen online at tsn1290.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com. Jesse, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime. What's up, guys?
Not too much. What's been better, covering the Blackhawks for this playoff run or covering the Cubbies so far this year?
Well, the Cubs are rebuilding, so I think you know the answer to that question. Hawks have a chance at the Cup.
I believe they're in year 95 of the 100-year rebuilding plan.
Yeah, that's probably true. But in Theo's world, Theo Epstein's world, they're in year two. So he says give him time. The rest of Chicago says it's been 100 years, please.
Exactly. Jesse, you know, obviously, the Blackhawks made quick work of the Minnesota Wild in the first round, winning in five games. And it's still up in the air if they're going to be facing the Detroit Red Wings or the San Jose Sharks in the next round. You know, who do you think the Hawks would have as their preference between those two teams?
I think Detroit. They match up better with them. The travel's easier. San Jose's on a little bit of a roll. Detroit's going to be coming off a seven-game series. So I think it's Detroit for a lot of reasons. But even if everything was equal, they do match up better against the Red Wings.
Jesse, were you impressed with how the Hawks handled the Wild in the first round? Like, you know, watching that series, it kind of seemed to me to be like back when you used to see Dallas, Colorado, Detroit, when they were really good. They got rid of teams for the most part. They were able to dispatch teams in, you know, in four or five games and keep those early round series shorter and allow themselves some rest early on in the process. Were you impressed with overall with the team's performance?
Yeah, I mean, it was a workmanlike performance, and, you know, it's not easy all the time to beat the eight seeds. We know that, seeing what happened last year. So I don't think the Wild are as good as the Kings were, but it doesn't mean that it had to end in five. Things can go six, seven, upsets can happen, goalie wins, and none of that happened. So I think it was workmanlike, and they should be complimented for just doing it in short order, just as San Jose took care of Vancouver. If the Hawks are pushed to seven and win and then have to go to the next round and play 2 days later, you never know what can happen. So if you're going to win a cup, you do need an easy series, whether it be first, third round, whatever the case may be, sort of easy one, and we move on from there. So, yes, I was impressed.
Jesse, how much do you think Coach Quenneville's ability to play Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook a little bit less during the regular season will impact the way they play down the stretch in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's, you never can figure those things out. I mean, sometimes they play big minutes and play great, and then sometimes you see some fatigue. You just don't know, because there's no stat that certainly, you know, tells you exactly why a guy's playing the way he is when it comes to minutes. You know, all things being equal, you want your defenseman to play the less minutes. There's no doubt about it. You want some even playing time to get the best out of them later on, especially with the compacted schedule, even though it was only 48 games. They were playing every other day and more often than that most of the time. So I don't know for sure how it affects a guy like Duncan Keith, but it can't hurt him. Let's put it that way.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com. Jesse, the Blackhawks, for the most part, are healthy. They do have a couple of sort of bigger injuries. That's to Ray Emery, their backup goaltender, and to Dave Boland. What are the status of both entering into the second round, whenever it's going to end up beginning?
Yeah, that was the beauty of an easy series in the first round. I think if the Hawks got down, you would have saw for sure Dave Boland back in action. They're both going to be healthy enough to go in the second round, and then Boland's obviously a little bit more important, considering Emery's going to be the backup. I think Boland against San Jose especially, but even if it's Detroit, is important. They're both stronger down the middle than Minnesota was. We know Boland is great in the playoffs in terms of his defensive ability. So he's going to be fine. He had a leg injury. He's been skating. He's been practicing. He's been running with the regular lines the last couple days. So Boland's going to be a huge addition. He, every time he comes back to the lineup, something good happens.
Jesse, what do you think is maybe the team in the playoffs that is going to present the biggest challenge for the Chicago Blackhawks left, not just the team that they would play next round, but what team in the Western Conference do you think is going to present them with the biggest challenge in order for them to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, I mean, it's either the Ducks or the Sharks. Any team that has a little bit of size and is strong down the middle gives them problems. And in the last couple of years, at different times, those two teams have given them problems. The Ducks this year a little bit. San Jose in the past, not so much this year. The Hawks swept the season series, but they swept a lot of season series. So it's one of those two teams. I can't tell you exactly which. It looks like San Jose's peaking. We'll see what happens with Anaheim tomorrow. But that would be it. A little size and strength down the middle usually gives them problems. The other thing would be a really intense forecheck. I think the Ducks probably bring that a little bit more than San Jose. So I can't, you know, Anaheim had the better year. So maybe I'll go with Anaheim as the answer. But San Jose is playing pretty good right now after their sweep.
Jesse, you look at the Blackhawks, and obviously the superstar names just roll off the tongue. Taves, Kane, Sharp, Keith, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But is this postseason a bit of a coming-out party for the Andrew Shaw, Bickle, and Stahlberg line?
Sure, yeah, I would say so. I mean, Shaw's, you know, Bickle's been there a little bit before, but a guy like Shaw is new to the playoff, you know, in terms of, you know, the experience he got last year and the regular season this year. But, yeah, it's a little bit of a coming-out party. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The Hawks, when they won in 2010, just like pretty much any team, were deep. Their 12 forwards could be interchangeable, and they ran the four lines against anybody, and that's kind of what we're seeing here. A lot of comparisons to that 2010 team, and it starts with the depth.
And you talk about vulnerabilities for the Hawks, Jesse, and talking about the forecheck and maybe some bigger teams. Has Corey Crawford basically, you know, shut up the critics, for lack of a better term, with his play thus far this season?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, absolutely. He was the guy that most people wanted to run out of town last offseason, and the boos have turned into cheers. They were chanting his name last game. That's the first time I've ever seen that, or heard that, I should say, in terms of Corey Crawford. So he's really won people over. I'm not surprised by it. He's had all the tools. He had a little bit of a slump his second year, rebounded fine. A lot of goalies go through their ups and downs. There was no legitimate reason he couldn't rebound, and he has. And very impressive. Great kid. I mean, you can only, you know, a lot of people around here love his personality. And so I think it was tough on him to hear the boos, but he's really rebounded in fine fashion.
Seems like Joel Quenneville's kind of getting, Jess, you know, getting more attention for the, not only what he's doing with the Blackhawks, but over the course of his career. Maybe that's being solidified now. Have you noticed, Coach Quenneville change at all from last year with the disappointing finish against Phoenix to this year, or has he just been a steadying force throughout?
Yeah, no, I think he has, absolutely. He said it at the end of last year. He needed to hold some guys more accountable. I think, last year, the last couple of years after the Cup, he kind of relied on his leaders in the room. But at the end of the day, the coach is the leader. And mm-hmm. I think he put down his foot. He told the front office to leave him alone and let him do his thing. He hired his own assistant coach, which he had never done before, in Compone from L.A., and he had a great year. So I think this year, I could tell you. I think he was a Stanley Cup-winning coach, and in the last couple of years, he got away from maybe what made him great. And I think this year, the team just simply wanted him to be that Stanley Cup-winning coach, and he was once again.
Jesse, we talked to you a little bit about, you know, possible second-round opponents for the Chicago Blackhawks, but you're in Chicago, and Blackhawk fans must have a pretty good memory about last year. Are Blackhawks fans secretly hoping that they play the San Jose Sharks based on what happened with Rafi Torres? Or is that something that's going to be maybe something blown out of proportion a little bit by the media?
No, I don't think it'll be blown out of proportion. I think either matchup is great for fans. I mean, there's obviously a storied rivalry with Detroit and plenty of storylines there. But there are a bunch of storylines with the San Jose mm-hmm. Sharks, starting with Rafi Torres. Taves and Jumbo Thornton fought this year, for God's sakes. You don't see that very often. And Thornton was responsible for a concussion Taves received last year. Then you have Anthony Emme, who goaltended them for the Stanley Cup victory in 2010. There's a lot of storylines here. Doug Wilson, the general manager, is a star player for the Hawks for many years.
Michael Hanzus, too.
I think Michael Hanzus, an in-season trade between two teams who face in the playoffs. You almost never see that in the NHL. So I think there's some great storylines, and not just Rafi Torres related, but certainly he's at the top of the list.
Jesse, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, the Blackhawks had Stanley Cup aspirations. That comes naturally when you get 77 points in a 48-game regular season. But, you know, Does the snub, if it's considered a snub, of Kane or Taves for the Hart Trophy give them any extra motivation?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, they're not going to say it externally, but I think if they're holding the Stanley Cup at the end of the year, it'll be kind of implicitly, it'll be implied, hey, we've got the MVPs on this team, all right? So I don't know if it's that big of a deal to them. I think they understand this. It was a goofy year. You know, all three finalists are from the East. East never played West, so media from the East didn't see it. So I don't know. I think they're a little perturbed by it, but if they're holding the Stanley Cup, not being a finalist for the Hart Trophy isn't going to be a big deal. Neither one of them were going to win it. Let's face it, I don't think. Yeah. It's going to be probably Ovechkin or Crosby. So it's probably a little perturbing today, but I think as we move along, the proof will be what happens on the ice in the next couple months here.
Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com, thanks as always for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy round two.
Okay, take care, guys.
Take care, Jesse. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com for having just joined us to talk about the Blackhawks. Something tells me, I get the suspicion we're going to be talking to Jesse a little bit over the next, you know, month to 6 weeks as the playoffs get deeper and deeper going. Blackhawks just look like the best team right now. But before we talk more about the Blackhawks a little bit later on in the show in Rapid Fire, let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens. Do their post-mortem after they went out to the Ottawa Senators in 5 games. You know, simple matter of them just losing their composure? Did they just not
they lost their composure, Drew. But execution, they blew some lead. That lead in game 4 killed them. I think, though, when you watch that series overall, and something that, you know, I had Montreal winning the series, so I didn't have Ottawa, and I was wrong. And one thing you really notice is that Montreal's size, or lack thereof, wasn't able to penetrate in the offensive zone, and they couldn't get anywhere. And they were just pushed aside, literally, like big guys pushing the little guy down, and they couldn't create off the cycle because they couldn't get in deep. And if they put the puck in deep, as soon as the puck's in there, one guy, boom, puck's off, puck's out. Or they get outmanned on the boards with it on 2-on-2 battles or 3-on-3 battles. Those are a little more rare, but and the puck was always out. They couldn't sustain any kind of, so if they were going to score off the rush, they couldn't sustain pressure. So, and their power play, which they rely on so heavily, I mean, they couldn't score 5-on-5. So their power play was the only way to score. And in that final game, they couldn't capitalize when they had the opportunities.
Let me ask you this. So we hear a lot about how Ottawa was a bad matchup because Ottawa's size is going to intimidate the Canadiens. What team in the NHL or in the playoffs, team in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference is sort of small enough that Montreal matched up well against them?
The Islanders would have been a little more of a skating series.
Okay.
You know, you look at the Islanders' top line. They're not going to be the most physical. Some of their lower guys, like Matt Martin, guys like that, are physical. But
Poso.
Yeah, physical. But overall, team-wise, they're a skating skill team. And they almost drew the Islanders. And that would have been probably a really exciting, high-scoring 7-game series. Didn't happen that way. And, you know, even with Pittsburgh isn't the biggest team or most physical. Now they're both 1-2. But those are kind of the teams that they would have had more success probably against, looking back at it. And, of course, hindsight being 20/20. But, yeah, I mean, you raise a good point. I mean, if they play against an L.A. St. Louis kind of squad, similar to Ottawa, would have been a very short series, as it was.
So where do the Canadiens go from here? Are we saying, and Ezio, we'll get you in on this one as well, are we saying that the Canadiens, they need to get bigger in the offseason?
Yeah, well, they have to get bigger, and they can't just get in guys that are bigger and not physical. I mean, it's not just a question of bigger. A guy like Brendan Gallagher is a physical player, but a guy like Michael Ryder is big, and he's not a physical player.
And they miss Cole in the series.
They miss a guy like Eric Cole, Richie, but...
I like Michelle, but they miss Cole.
Michelle Therrien was asked this throughout the season about size and size. The Montreal Canadiens finished second in the Eastern Conference, so they beat most teams on most nights. They were in second, but were they maybe overachievers? Were they better than their record indicated? Maybe the Northeast Division wasn't the strongest division. The Buffalo Sabres were easy prey this year. But for the most part, it was a decent division.
Four playoff teams.
They finished second in that division. So, I mean, you can't say that it was the worst division. We know that Southeast Division was probably the weakest division. But it wasn't really a weak division. They finished second. So what happened here?
They first in the division, second in the conference.
Sorry, first in the division, second in the conference, I should say. And you can't say that the Montreal Canadiens all of a sudden, you know, weren't as good as we thought they were. Really, they couldn't solve Craig Anderson. Their big guys didn't show up. Max Pacioretty revealed after the series that he separated his shoulder in game one. Max Pacioretty was not a factor in the series.
He wasn't.
And sure, you know, we talked about this earlier. Your captain goes out in Brian Gionta. Carey Price doesn't play, so Peter Budaj has to go in overtime. And then he has to start game five. But that doesn't explain the way they played in that third period when I believe it was 2-1 or 3-1 going into that period, and then they completely lost it. P.K. Subban took a penalty. Thomas Plekanec took a penalty. They didn't show up. They were a no-show in their own building with the playoffs on the line. And that has to come down on some of the veteran guys in the locker room. Gionta wasn't there. But some of these other guys have to take the brunt of it. And when you look at Andre Markov, or you look at like a David Desharnais or a Pacioretty, who is a veteran in the league at this point, Ryder, guys like Ryder, those guys have to take responsibility because they didn't put up a fight. And they almost said after that fourth game, okay, we don't have Price, we don't have Gionta, we're just going to give up here. We're beaten. They were defeated almost going into that fifth game.
And I think it was Ron McLean or Elliot Friedman said on Hockey Night in Canada, what they were outscored 13-0 in the third period of the series. I mean, come on, you're not winning any series. 13-0?
Well, that's embarrassing. That's a team that's, I mean, you know, if the tension gets greater and the pressure gets greater as the game goes on, isn't that the sign of a team that wilts in the face of pressure?
Yeah, but maybe a team that already exceeded expectations, Drew, and wasn't ready for what they faced. But the talent core is there. I mean, there are some discipline issues, and they need to rein in P.K. Subban. I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, there are some discipline issues, but the young core that this group has, and Gallagher and Subban and Emelin, I mean, the nice core there, you talk about Galchenyuk, he's a beauty. He's a great player. And the other guys, you know, Pacioretty's been in the league a few years, but younger guys. So they have a nice young skill core. They need to get bigger, preferably up the middle. I mean, I like Thomas Plekanec and I like Desharnais in terms of talent. Plekanec's a really underrated player as far as I'm concerned. But you can't go into a playoff series with the center ice being Plekanec, Desharnais, Galchenyuk, who played center for a period of time in the series, or Halpern, and then maybe Ryan White is your only guy who's probably over 6 feet. And 200 pounds. I don't know Galchenyuk's weighing in at these days. Halpern's not a big boy. Galchenyuk's not a big guy. Plekanec and Desharnais are very small. So when you look at it that way, guys, look at the size difference there. They need to get big and big up the middle. That doesn't mean they don't need to get big up the wings, but they do need to get big up the middle. I mean, Gionta and Gallagher are the right wingers here. Small guys. Now, as you mentioned,
they play bigger than their size, though.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's a good point.
Still smaller guys, and there's only so much you can do when you're playing bigger. On your left side, you know, you have a guy like Michael Ryder, soft. Mm-hmm. Great hands, good shooter, soft. So you need to get bigger kind of everywhere, but you can't do that all in one fell swoop. You have to be disciplined about it.
So should the Habs be happy that they... first of all, sort of a two-part question. One, did they overachieve in getting to second in the Eastern Conference?
100%.
And so, two, they can just be happy that they got this far after finishing 15th last year?
You're never content to lose, but you have to be look at it at a macro level. And I think if you look at it at a macro level, Mark Bergevin has to be pretty satisfied with the way his team has reacted this year. And the fact that is, you have a guy like Galchenyuk now for 15, 20 years, because he's going to be that good.
Look at that Eastern Conference, and with the exception of the Jets... Because they didn't.
Lots of NHL players have 20-year careers, do they?
Well, I mean, guys with that kind of skill.
When it comes to Yager and Solani, they have 25-year careers.
I'm allowed to bug Richard every now and then, you know.
Bug away, Drew. But we can bug you back. That's the that's the give and take.
Absolutely.
But you know, when you look at the Eastern Conference,
in 20 years, Drew, you'll be 130.
Okay. Let's continue here for a second.
Hang on. Ezzy's the voice of reason. Oh, God.
I'm the voice of reason chocolates. Okay, so the thing with the Eastern Conference right now, and including the Jets, even though they weren't able to make the playoffs this year, the future is very bright for these teams. The Ottawa Senators have overachieved just by getting to the second round with the injuries they faced. The future is very bright in Montreal, as Richie mentioned, with Galchenyuk, with Gallagher, with Subban. Subban's still only 22 years old, 23 years old, so the future is very bright. Carey Price is in the prime of his career. And you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, whether or not they're able to get to the second round, they've really had a good season, and the future is bright. You look at guys like Matt Fratton, Jake Gardner, James Van Riemsdyk, Nazem Kadri. These are young guys. The future looks bright. And then when the Jets, you look at the core, Kane, Bogo, Trouba. I mean, these teams are all really showing that the future is bright. Now, the Montreal Canadiens, Drew, you asked, should they be happy going from 15th in the East to 2nd? I think so, but they definitely shouldn't be happy about the way they played in the playoffs, and that's what determines how you approach things next year, because you start to see the lack of playoff experience and how that materialized. You know, you can look at this in hindsight and say that the big guys didn't perform. But Carey Price didn't play well.
That team has playoff experience. I mean, they just buckled.
Yeah, they do have some playoff experience, and they didn't get it done. And it's up to, even without Brian Gionta, you still, or Lars Eller, sure, those guys, but still, what did Thomas Plekanec do in that last game? He didn't do a lot. And he's one of the guys that, without a guy like Gionta in the lineup, he has to step up. A guy like Michael Ryder was acquired from the Dallas Stars to get goals and be kind of a leadership presence. He didn't do a lot. The big guys didn't step up. The best players on the team did not step up, and they were whooped in that last game. I mean, they were absolutely whooped in their own building. And the fans left early in that third period, and they should have, because it was an embarrassing performance. I love Montreal. I've been to many games. I was there last year. Big fans, and I think they have some of the best fans in the NHL. But the team did not show up in that fifth game, and they mailed it in. Let's be honest. They mailed that last game in. You can't really say anything else aside from that their performance was really bad.
How much longer can PK Subban keep up his act before he has to become a professional?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
And before Jack Todd accuses me of being a racist, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, Drew, his skill level. I mean, that shot he took in that, I guess it was game five. That shot he took. I mean, not many guys can take a shot off their back foot and put a top corner and it might hit somebody. But his skill level is unbelievable. But he needs to stay disciplined, and he needs to stop acting, and he needs to stop engaging and even throwing teammates under the bus visibly in front of the cameras. There's certain things that he needs, and a maturation. He's a young guy, and there's maturation is a factor. I mean, but at some point, again, you know, you've played 4 years in the league, I believe it is now, so you have to step up a little bit, and he may win the Norris Trophy, but there still is a ways to go in terms of maturity there.
Before we go to break, I think you got to pay a little bit of tribute to Brandon Proust. Can you imagine separating your rib from your rib cage and pushing your own rib back into place? That's what he did in the in game four.
Well, separating ribs is something you do all the time, Drew.
Yeah, but I usually eat them. I don't then put them back into the rib cage.
It's at the White House, though.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, that's got to be painful. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, more of the NHL playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Down 1 hour to go Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290 with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our website is illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, all the good ways to find us.
What about Instagram?
Yes, we are on Instagram. It's not at Illegal Curve on Instagram. What is it?
Just, yeah, it is.
Is it at Illegal Curve? Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't follow you, Drew.
You're the official Instagram king of Illegal Curve there, Ezzy.
Well, Remus actually posts the pictures, but I'm in most of the pictures. Remus always has a camera on him.
Does he post selfies? Remus is a kind of selfie kind of guy, right?
No, actually, you know, Remo doesn't do selfies.
He's a selfish kind of guy.
Neither should anybody out there. I mean, how many pictures can you take in that same mirror? I mean, at least change the mirror.
How was being on the field at Shaw Park last week?
It was absolutely terrific. I don't know how you segued from selfies to that.
Well, because I was on the photos were on Instagram of you guys, and Dave and Remus, post show after the Gold Eyes open house. Paul Edmonds, our good buddy, apparently gave you free rein and said that you guys can get on the field at Shaw Park and take some photos.
That was really nice. Big thanks to Paul again.
Remus is here. He wants to talk.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that was a lot of fun.
The selfies or the baseball?
Yeah, I don't take selfies. They're terrible.
That's what I said, Remo. You don't do that nonsense.
Yeah, I was a little bit jealous seeing you guys on the field at Shaw Park. Next year, you know, assuming we're invited back after you guys didn't eat too many hot dogs, next year I'm hoping that we can convince Paul Les to take a little BP.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I thought with that Blue Jays hat that you've got on, I thought next year you were going to say we're going to do the short Rogers Field.
I'll tell you what, the way the Blue Jays are playing, I'm not too far away from being a call-up for the Jays this year. Anyways, let's talk about the Minnesota Wild and their post-mortem after they went out at the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Are you saying that if you were there, there'd be less hot dogs eaten than if you weren't there?
I'm saying that if
Yeah. Well, Drew's choking on his words right now.
On his hot dog.
Very funny.
Anyways. Let's just say that we had a good time, but we missed you guys.
Okay, fair enough.
But not that much.
Minnesota Wild, were they the quintessential just happy to be their team in the playoffs?
Yeah, because they're pretty loaded with young talent, Jonas Brodin, Granlund, among Charlie Coyle, amongst other players. And you know what, Drew? The Pominville injury obviously was hurt them because he came back and he was playing on the depth lines. And really, their star players really didn't perform. So those are factors and obviously why they didn't win. But overall, they're going to need to address a goaltending issue this offseason. But they have a nice young core, and they have a veteran group that isn't too old. And obviously with Ryan Suter as a stud. So it's looking that team's on the up and up. Although, do you guys not agree that the atmosphere in the XL Energy Center just looked eh?
Well, I think that probably to some extent because the fans knew that.
Even so.
Yeah, but it was pretty quiet. For the state of hockey, it was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Wild waited, the fans specifically and the team, waited a few years to get back into the playoffs. And now they were back in the playoffs. And sure, it wasn't maybe as electric of an atmosphere as it was in Toronto or Montreal or Ottawa or other cities, Chicago, even Vancouver.
Vancouver wasn't so electric either.
Yeah, Vancouver, they didn't sell anything out until desperation time.
In five games, Mikko Koivu had 0 points.
Yeah.
He didn't have a single point in the playoffs. Zach Parise didn't have very many points either. These guys were outmatched. And let's be honest, the Minnesota Wild limped into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They didn't play very well towards the end of the regular season because they were in that 5 or 6 slot around there for a little while. But they limped into the playoffs. And without Danny Heatley, I thought they would have enough depth. And a guy like Jason Zucker, I thought, was one of the most impressive players for them. But Richie mentioned, the guys that, you know, are kind of the future of the team. Jonas Brodin, Charlie Coyle, obviously Parise and Suter. They just don't have enough depth. And you look at their defense, you've got guys like Marco Scandella, Jared Spurgeon, who I've talked about, you know, ad nauseum. Tom Gilbert, he couldn't really crack the top four of the Edmonton Oilers. And they need help there. I think you build your team going forward around Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin, who looks like a steal for the Minnesota Wild scouting department. And you build your team around them, but you got to improve on the back end.
You do.
And you probably have to pick up another goaltender because Nicholas Backstrom, you know, he's getting older.
UFA.
Josh Harding, we've talked about him a lot, deserves a lot of credit. He gave just such a heroic performance coming in there. Mm-hmm. And he's coming in there. It's like a shooting gallery when you're playing the Chicago Blackhawks. Blackhawks did a great job. And then he gets injured. They have to put in Darcy Kemper. His first playoff experience wasn't really fair, but he went in there, did a pretty good job. And it was a perfect storm for the Chicago Blackhawks just to take advantage of them. And it really wasn't a close. This was by far the most lopsided series, way more lopsided than the San Jose-Vancouver series, even though that was the only sweep. Mm-hmm. But it was just, the timing wasn't right. This team's going to be back in the playoffs for years to come because they've got Norris Trophy candidates, they've got Parise. I mean, come on. This team just didn't have enough depth to compete with the Blackhawks, who have arguably the most depth.
And, you know, there's a couple of things. You know, you look at there, obviously, we talked about their bottom four coming into the series and said, you know, how do they keep up with any teams really in the playoffs, but especially Chicago and their depth. You mentioned Ezzie Scandella, Spurgeon, Falk, and Gilbert being their bottom four. And Gilbert played, you know, top four in Edmonton. Wasn't great, you know, doesn't that physical and doesn't really distinguish himself that much offensively, especially, you know, point-wise. So he can move the puck, but he needs to be in a lesser role or complemented by, you know, by a better player he's playing with. Overall, that team was just overmatched this year. And you mentioned, Ezzie, you know, Parise, one goal in the series, Koivu, nothing. So for a team that didn't have a great defense and lost their starting goalie, you need to have your top guys going, and they didn't. So, I mean, that was a pretty simple one, you know, five and out there. Right?
What did the Wild do with Nicholas Backstrom, do you think?
Four and out. Was it four and out?
It was four. It was five and out.
Five and out,
yeah. You were correct, though. You actually predicted the Blackhawks in five. Ezzie and I had the Blackhawks sweeping, but you had the Blackhawks in five.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So what do you think they do with Nicholas Backstrom in this offseason?
The goalie market's so weird, Drew. And you're going to have the Longo in there, of course, again. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be other goals available. You know, what does LA do with Bernier at this point? In all honesty, I mean, Quick's been unbelievable. Do you keep him and Schneider, kind of Schneider situation where he's behind the guy? At some point, the guy's going to want to get paid. and you can trade him for maybe get a little bit more speed up front if that's something you're looking for or trying to fill other needs, although they don't have many needs, if any. So I do think the fit still makes sense, to be honest. You know, where's Minnesota going to go otherwise? So they might have a little bit, they might be able to kind of corner the market on him in terms of, okay, you don't have many options. We'll offer you a fair deal, but maybe not as much as you were making before, and we'll offer you a two-year one. Let's see what happens.
He's been making $6 million a year.
Not that anymore.
Not, I mean, after this past year.
But he's not going to make it next year.
No, right, especially with the salary cap going down. Yeah. I mean, the Wild are, you know, a team that's going to have to do some salary cap juggling.
Who needs a goalie, though? I mean, Calgary needs a goalie.
Right.
Kiprusoff retires.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams may dip in. You know, maybe Edmonton wants a veteran, stuff like that. But overall, there's not a huge goaltending need around the National Hockey League, and there's really more supply than demand, frankly.
Well, Richie, when you look at, Andrew, when you look at, just quickly, when you look at the goalie market, but specifically the Minnesota Wild, it's pretty clear that, you know, Darcy Kuemper is the goalie of the future. Mm-hmm. But I think the question becomes, are you going to try to maybe do a split situation next year with Darcy Kuemper and Josh Harding if you're not going to re-sign Backstrom? That's a difficult task when you've still got a... or difficult decision to make when you've still got a pretty young defense.
Exactly.
And yep. I look at the Minnesota Wild as a perfect candidate to go after a defenseman in the free agent market, because really you don't have to pick up too many forwards because your forward group is pretty good. And you got Pominville. But
right.
I see them signing Backstrom to a 1 or 2 year deal just because there's not a good succession plan in place there. Those guys, I don't think, are ready to step into a number one goalie role.
Agree.
Especially with Josh Harding's, I mean, you can't rely on him. I mean, you know, obviously great story, but, you know, by having multiple sclerosis, it's hard to rely on him for anything more than a backup role.
Well, you hope, that aside, Drew, and you hope that doesn't present an obstacle, but that aside, I mean, he hasn't been a starter in goal in the league period anyways,
right,
so
right.
There's that concern as well.
Backstrom is still fantastic during the regular season, so it's a situation where he's going to have to take a bit of a pay cut towards the end of his career, and like Richie said, the salary cap's going down, and they're going to have to use that money to get a defenseman here, because you talk about, you know, windows of opportunity, Richie, and they didn't get Parise and Suter to redo a slow rebuild, right?
Oh, the future's still very bright.
They have a long window. It's an open window.
I mean, that's exactly. I mean, it's not like Parise or Suter are old.
Forget the fact that they went out and they got Pominville, too. Mm-hmm. So they got him to increase their depth, but, you know, injuries happen.
Yep.
And that was unfortunate.
And they need scoring. And Pominville's a shooter more than anything, and they need shooting. I mean, I think they've kind of realized Parise isn't the 45 Ovechkin goal scorer that they might have had believed he was, even though if you really watched him, he's never really been that.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great player, works really hard. But, I mean, he's not a natural guy he's going to put in 50, although they've kind of paid him that way. Ryan Suter is everything and more. And Parise is great, don't get me wrong. But, you know, Koivu's not a scorer. Parise is a scorer, but not your top-notch. Pominville is a scorer. He's not a top-notch scorer. Probably want one more shooter in there.
But, I mean, Suter, I mean, it's hard to believe. Nobody's worth $7.5 million, but they can't ask for much more from Ryan Suter.
Well, I mean,
if Ryan Suter plays this way for the next decade, he's going to be worth every dollar that they paid him.
More,
Yeah.
He is that dominant.
Yeah.
I mean, he we talked about P.K. Subban last segment. I think he deserves the nomination, but I think Ryan Suter, I have a feeling that the writers are going to vote for Ryan Suter because he's so dominant defensively.
I think this is, I would expect Ryan Suter to win the Norris here.
It's going to be a close race.
Yeah.
Close race. I think Chris Letang maybe is we'd all agree, is number three.
How'd Letang get in there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't a great year for defensemen.
I was asking myself.
I mean, who's your third defenseman for a Norris Trophy right now? I mean,
Chara's always under consideration.
Yeah, Chara. I mean, you're right.
Chara didn't have a great year, though.
Letang didn't thrill me as a selection there.
Well, just because, I mean, Chris Letang is a great offensive player. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you're certainly in a nice situation there. You're not defending a whole lot in Pittsburgh.
You know, quickly on this topic, I like Duncan Keith to get a Norris Trophy consideration, but he's won it before, but maybe the offensive numbers weren't there.
And Doughty didn't have
points. This is a long conversation that we could get into if we want to get into it now, but I think, first off, the awards are important.
Pietrangelo.
But I think that there's too much focus on if a guy makes the playoffs or not, especially for coaches and how they do. I mean, let's look at the regular season in somewhat of a vacuum, because it is awards based on the regular season, mm-hmm. not the playoffs.
Fair enough.
But when you look at those awards, especially the Selke, Norris, a lot is looked at, okay, were they not nominated for another award? What were their offensive totals? the criteria, I think, is a little bit skewed. But I do think that the Norris Trophy probably will go to one of Suter or Subban, and maybe Letang got in and when he shouldn't have over guys like Chara or Doughty. There's a lot of guys that you could give consideration to, Keith.
Well, I mean, you just look at the time on ice. Suter, 27 minutes and 16 seconds. I mean, that's playing half the game.
Yeah, he's a horse.
And it's not like he's wearing down very much. He's playing a very... Because he's so good that it's almost an economical 27 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, Drew. You said it, because the guy doesn't get tired. They talk about how the teammates are just like, aren't you tired? And nah, fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, because
He's like the opposite of Remus. Remus is always tired.
Right. Remus is on the other side of the glass, nodding his head in the affirmative.
It's weird, because Remus sleeps a lot, too, so you'd wonder why he was so tired. He sleeps like 10 hours a day, so...
Like, Remus, how are you? Tired.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Islanders Game 6 tonight on TSN. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Michael Remus joins us for the last 40 minutes of this program. Gentlemen, tonight, Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders, Game 6.
You always know it's Remus behind there because the music.
Yeah, because it's the most...
Is this Daft Punk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remus loves playing Daft Punk.
What year is this song from?
95?
Well, you don't play anything past 95, so it has to be before 95 or 95.
Pittsburgh and the Islanders, Game 6 tonight on TSN, the only game on television tonight.
Remus, you just take the musical... the list of the old Jets, the Jets 1.0 DJ?
I can. I don't know. What about the Islanders? They're pretty good, hey?
That's his way of getting us to talk about hockey.
Yeah,
I think.
Pierre Turgeon, he's pretty good.
Pat LaFontaine.
Yeah. Pat LaFontaine.
Wade Dubovitz.
I'm glad that's a little bit later.
Yeah. Wade Dubovitz is the guy who made the save in the shootout.
David Volek.
Yeah, I guess David Volek. David Volek. Wade Dubowitz is the guy who made the save in the shootout to get the Islanders into their previous postseason berth.
There you go.
Do you think that this game goes back to 7? Or do you think that the Pittsburgh sort of regained their swagger with the Game 5 smackdown of the Islanders?
But they had that smackdown in Game 1. So the series is so fun. It just back and forth. I mean...
Yeah, there's no defense.
And the McDonald injury is huge. If I had to bet, I'd say no, Drew. I'd say the Pittsburgh finishes it because they know it's hard to make that long run if you're going 7 in the first.
Mm-hmm.
If you go 7 throughout, it's obviously, I don't know if it's ever been done before, but the Islanders need to continue to keep the pace up because I still think that gives them their best opportunity at the end of the day. You know, the Vo Koon issue is really interesting because he's had their number this year. And we had Arthur Staple on the Wednesday NHL Midweek Show, and he talked about how, you know, it's a different season. Sure it is, but you know, he was playing really well last game, and the run and gun with Fleury is great because Fleury was losing his composure, and they could just take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is Nabokov. I think Pittsburgh's really done a good job of exposing his weaknesses, you know, leaning down a lot, picking the top corner on him, or being really aggressive because he's smaller, and then leaving him vulnerable to passes on the side to side. But, you know, Tavares is going to be so key because when he plays really well, this team's got a really good chance, And when he's off the scoreboard, obviously, this team can really, at the end of the day, and Franz Nielsen left with an injury. I'm not sure his status is for today.
I think it said that he's scheduled to play, but let me look that up for a second.
But Tavares needs to be otherworldly for it to go back.
Yep, absolutely. And it can't be overstated. They got good goaltending. I mean, this is to me the thing that's the big X factor of the series, if you want to call it that. Maybe X factor is not the proper word, but what has become the focal point for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't played well, and Dan Bylsma before Game 5 makes the tough decision to announce Thomas Vo Koon as a starter. And what does Thomas Vo Koon do? He puts up a shutout. And he's probably going to be the goalie in Game 6.
Yeah, he will be.
And why wouldn't he? When he comes in after Marc-Andre Fleury lets in six goals against the New York Islanders, and they needed to make a change because the series, tied at 2, is almost slipping away. And when you go out and you acquire Jerome Iginla and Douglas Murray and Brendan Morrow, and not to mention Jussi Jokinen, who's been a good addition on the bottom six lines, you're going for it. This team's going for it. And now they've got the consistency in net, even though it was just one game. I think the series ends in game six. But when Pittsburgh is rolling their four lines, and even though you've got some issues which might create problems against the Boston Bruins with your bottom six defensemen, mm-hmm. and you know guys like Derek England, you know, aren't the strongest. They're not, you know, the big bad Pittsburgh Penguins defense like they were. Brooks Orpik hasn't found his stride after coming back from an injury. But when they're rolling four lines, the New York Islanders don't have a chance. Most teams don't have a chance. What I liked that Dan Bylsma did as well is that he brought back Tyler Kennedy and Joe Vitale into the lineup. Mike Colligan, a good friend of the show, wrote about this, and I thought he was bang on. Tyler Kennedy, people forget, has 60 games of playoff experience. Mm-hmm. He was on the bench, and I know he was on the bench because I took him in my hockey pool. And I was disappointed. They went with Bo Bennett, but Tyler Kennedy comes in. He ends up getting the winning goal on that breakaway. And I think those moves, too, were almost just as important as putting Thomas Volkoon in net because they added a speed element, Kennedy and Vitale. And I think, like I said, when this team is rolling four lines, they're almost unbeatable.
Well, but the thing is, as you know, how did the Islanders win, right? They seem to be the run-and-gun games. Yet with Pittsburgh being so deep and deeper than the Islanders, run-and-gun games were working with Fleury.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, I was talking about the series, obviously, with some people at the office, and Ian at the office said that, you know, as long as the Penguins got, say, 900, a save percentage of 900, they were going to win the series. And, and Fleury couldn't even do that. Yep.
But so, that's what happened last year with Philly.
Right.
Trading chances, and you could argue whose forward group was better last year because Philly's was pretty darn good.
You really have to give Ray Shiro credit, because when he acquired Thomas Volkoon Richie, people said, okay, well, is he in there to challenge? He was acquired for this exact reason.
Good point.
If Fleury falters in the playoffs, you can put in a veteran like Thomas Volkoon, who has a track record of being good. Mm-hmm. You can put him in, and he'll give you good goaltending. You can't say the same thing about Brent Johnson.
Well, no. I mean, and they never thought they would have to rely on Brent Johnson last year.
Right.
But with Volkoon, I mean, yeah, he pitched a shutout, but even if his save percentage is, you know, 915, nothing outstanding, you know, average probably, the Penguins are going to win the series. They're going to win this game. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, you know, I don't know what Nabokov's save percentage has been this series. Let me check it out. But
it's probably not very good.
No, and nobody's talking about him because, I mean, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury was just that bad.
Well, his save percentage in the series, Drew, is .847.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I said. We were talking about exposing their weaknesses. And Nabokov is going down to search for the puck. And if you remember Letang's goal, I think it was in game 3 or 4. Literally, Nabokov's leaning down on the power play to see where the puck is. And Letang just picks top corner because he's small. Yeah. And to compensate for being small, and he's always done this, even in his time in San Jose, is be extra aggressive. And when you're extra aggressive, Mike Richter had to do the same thing when he played for the New York Rangers. When you're small, you have to be more aggressive to take away the angle. When you're more aggressive, if the puck moves side to side, that's how teams took advantage of Richter. That's how teams are taking advantage of Nabokov.
It's amazing that this is going to a game six. Or just goes to show you how bad the Penguins' goaltending was, that this is going to a game six, that Nabokov gave up 4 goals in game 5, and his goals against average dropped.
Yep.
I mean, his goals against average is 4.69 in this series.
But you talk about the kind of rolling it and letting it go. I mean, Tavares, we talked about Arthur, can't really be stopped. I mean, Pittsburgh doesn't have that shutdown guy. So, and the Islanders, if they want to get it going, you know, playing a tight game. The Islanders play a fast game, guys. That's their style of play. Mm-hmm. They want to push the pace. That's when they succeed. So Pittsburgh can do that, but they also can do it the other way, I think. They're a little more structured than the Islanders. So in that game was 0-0. Game 5 was 0-0, guys, until about 12-minute mark of the second period. And then, obviously, the floodgates open, and Crosby scored that beautiful goal for a number to make it 3-0. But, you know, when you're in that kind of a game, the Islanders need to kind of play that way. You know, the 0-0, I thought, kind of favored Pittsburgh.
Sure.
The Islanders started off all right, but
they got nothing to lose. Who cares if you open it up too much?
That's right.
I mean, you know.
That's right.
Pittsburgh's going to score on you regardless.
That's right.
And that's what the Penguins want to do. Dan Bylsma wants the Penguins to be tighter defensively. He wants better goaltending. Obviously, he's not getting it. But when you're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, they'll gladly exchange chances. We saw that with the Winnipeg Jets when the Penguins beat them, I think it was 8-4 in Pittsburgh, when it was end-to-end hockey. They have no problem with that because they can do it. They have so much talent. Crosby's the best player in the game. Malkin is up there as well. And you just go up and down the list. There's more guys that can score, which is evidenced by the fact that they throw in a guy like Tyler Kennedy, and he scores on one of his first shifts. So they all they have to do is limit that top line, and if they get a couple goals, that's fine, because the Penguins are the best offensive team in the league. They can score 3 or 4 goals on average, in the playoffs included. So they're fine to play that type of game. It's really difficult for the Islanders now to play any different style, especially with the guy who led them in minutes. Richie mentioned him, Andrew McDonald. So they've put Thomas Hickey in, right, a guy who's smaller and he's got speed, but can be largely ineffective when you're going up against possibly Malkin on that second line, or even Morrow, Aginla on the third line, wherever they play. So it's a really tough situation. They almost have to play a perfect game. Nabokov has to stand on his head, and Tavares has to find a way to score more goals than he has been lately. And it's a tough task.
You talk about the defense. Another reason why they have to push the pace. They can't get into the cycle game. Vishnovsky, Strait, Hickey, those guys can't defend the cycle. And Pittsburgh's bigger than them. Malkin, especially forward to defense. Malkin, Aginla, Morrow, strong on the boards. Guys who can create off the half boards and can create below the goal line. The Islanders want to push that pace and skate back and forth because those guys can't defend for prolonged periods of time, especially with the size differential. So the Islanders have to win game 6-4.
Richie, the best thing that can happen, and that's true. I mean, even if they get a good start, it might not matter. But the best thing I think that can happen for the Islanders at home in front of their hometown crowd is to get the fans into it, get goals early, possibly get not just a 1-goal lead, but a 2 or 3 goal lead. That's the best case scenario. If they get behind, or if they try to, keep it low scoring, they're gonna get burnt. That's what the Penguins do best. That's what they do best.
The Islanders are winning today. I don't think it's a 1-0, 2-1 game. I think it's 4-3 minimum.
We'll find out. Game is on TSN tonight, the only game on TV, so you can catch it there. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look ahead to the second round and see who some of the team's preferred matchups would be. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, shortly after 2:30 in the afternoon on this Saturday afternoon. Second round is going to get underway. Well, the first round ends at the latest on Monday night. If any of the games tomorrow night, and if any of the game 6 is tomorrow night, go to game 7. That would happen on Monday night. So the second round will probably start Wednesday or Thursday of next week. You look at the teams that have qualified for the second round already. Let's start with the Ottawa Senators. They're going to either play Pittsburgh, Boston, or Washington.
Uh-huh.
Who's their best matchup against?
Really good question. I know we were kind of discussing that between the breaks there. I think probably Washington, because I do think Washington's the weakest out of those three teams.
You heard what Al Strachan said earlier on the show. He said that he thinks that Ottawa could defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins, potentially.
Could? I do agree that they could. I think all those teams would have their handful with the Ottawa Senators. I think the Ottawa Senators is the team nobody wants to play right now. More so than San Jose. Because you could talk a little bit about a lack of speed with Ottawa, but overall, they can really play all different ways. And even though they can't put the puck in the net a ton, although they could against Montreal, I mean, they can defend with the best of them. That 1-6 defense is as good as it gets right now, guys. And Craig Anderson's been otherworldly. So, and Paul McLean's been great at just picking his spots. So it's a... They're really going to be a formidable opponent for anybody down the stretch here. And if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins and you go through the Islanders tonight, we're going to assume that they beat them. If not tonight, then tomorrow night, because they'll be back-to-back.
Yeah.
They're going to go through. That's the 8th-seed team. And then they're going to go through the 7th-seed team. But this is no regular 7th-seed team. I mean, it's a 7th-seed team that did it without Carlson, without Cowan, without Mihailuk for large portions of the season. And you may see Jason Spezza pop in the middle of the series. And then it gets different because Turris, who's not a first-line center, he's really proven that down the stretch here. But Elliot Friedman talked about how he's become better defensively. Sure, that's great.
They got that shorthanded goal in Game 5.
But it's easier to become better. It's easier to become better defensively than to take the next step offensively. He doesn't appear to be doing that. So Spezza drops you down, and he makes your power play good, and that's an issue. That'd be a tough team. They're going to be tough without Spezza. They get Spezza, though.
And I mean,
so long as the Ewing theory doesn't come into effect,
right? They keep saying that Spets is not going to be ready. But sometimes when there's a little bit of smoke, and they're not going to come out and say, "Oh, he's going to be there," you wouldn't mind dropping a Jason Spezza appearance on a surprised opponent.
I would be surprised if he wasn't in the lineup by game four or five of that series, whoever they play.
It sounds like. I mean, he's skating.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe it's just a conditioning sort of issue at this point in time, but it does sound like he's getting closer and closer to being back in the lineup. Who do you think Ottawa, wants to play the most?
Well, last segment we talked about tonight's game and previewed tonight's game, Pittsburgh versus the Islanders, game six. And if Pittsburgh wins, they will play Pittsburgh. They don't want to play Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to play Pittsburgh. If you have the option of any other team, you take the other team. You want to play Washington, and I think Washington or the Rangers will be the weakest team that's left, because right now the way Ottawa's playing and the way they basically disposed of Montreal, I think Boston presents the biggest challenge to the Pittsburgh Penguins because they're just so strong in every area. But the Ottawa Senators, if they do end up playing the Pittsburgh Penguins over the Washington Capitals, they're just going to have their hands full. And especially if they aren't able to get Spezza back, they're going to have problems because of all of the different combinations on forward that they're going to present to them. Char and Chris Phillips and Eric Carlson and Patrick Wierkoch, they've done a good job. Jared Cowan, they've done a good job, but they're facing a completely different team in the Pittsburgh Penguins than they were against the Montreal Canadiens. A deeper team, a bigger team, and with so many weapons that they can throw out. And the way that I think Richie would agree that the Ottawa Senators defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins is if they continue to get strong goaltending, if not better. But even with strong goaltending, they're still not going to be shutting out the Pittsburgh Penguins because so few teams do. But you're going to have to get a lot more offense from the likes of Zibanejad and Silverberg. Those guys are going to have to score essentially two goals a game, and it can happen. But in a seven-game series, that's a tall task to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. So you don't want to face them, but there's a good chance they will. That's the downside about being in the seeding, being the seventh seed. That's what happens when the eighth seed gets knocked out, right?
The one catch there, of course, is if you're the Senators and you look at those three teams, you look at Boston with Rask, you look at Washington with Holtby, and you look at Pittsburgh with Fleury/Vaucoon, you know you have the advantage in goal probably in all series,
right?
But unquestionably in the Pittsburgh series. And that's the one thing, if you want to pick one spot to be better this time of the year, probably that.
Moving to the Western Conference, we know that the Blackhawks are through to the second round after they dispatch the Minnesota Wild. Mm-hmm. They'll play either San Jose or Detroit, depending on what happens between Detroit and Anaheim tomorrow night. Do the Blackhawks have an overwhelming preference as to who they play?
Yeah, I think they want to play Detroit. I think they beat Detroit in five max. I think Detroit would be maxed out. In all honesty, I don't think they'd be able to keep up because they play basically a similar style in terms of the skating ability, but they're just Chicago's better. You can argue the first line because Datsyuk and Zetterberg are that good, but really better everywhere else. And goalie is probably equal. So I think Chicago would go right through them. And as Jesse Rogers said in hour two of the show, you're talking about a team that's going to have gone seven games and traveled to the West Coast. And Chicago was traveling an hour, if that flight, if probably not
maybe
even that,
45 minutes
to Minnesota. Right. They played five games, and Detroit will have played seven. Flying to Anaheim, I think Chicago beat them in four or five. Five max. San Jose is a whole different story because San Jose is deeper. And up the middle, they're rolling, they're rolling some real talent, guys. Thornton, obviously. Pavelski is playing third. You have Couture. You have other guys who can play center, too. And then you look at their defense, which I don't love. Had a really solid appearance, and Niemi's been solid. So I think San Jose, they prefer unquestionably to play Detroit.
But Patrick Sharp was just asked that question. This is coming via Twitter by Brian Hamilton of the Chicago Tribune. Yeah. Patrick Sharp's response is, if you're asking me which team I like better or dislike better, I dislike them both equally.
Yeah. So he's basically saying whoever we play.
Why do they ask that question?
We're okay.
They never answer it.
Well, of course. They're never going to give a team. Why should Patrick Sharp? Maybe he hates San Jose, but he's not going to give them any fuel.
I know.
Marian Hossa probably wants to play the San Jose Sharks because of mm-hmm. Rafi Torres, but I agree with Richie. They want to play the Detroit Red Wings because even though the Detroit Red Wings have forced a Game 7 against the Anaheim Ducks, the Anaheim Ducks at times have dominated the Detroit Red Wings. They've done a great job of sticking in there and forcing overtime, and Datsyuk and Zetterberg have put the team on their backs, and they've done a great job, but they're probably the weaker team going into the second round between the Sharks, and the Sharks are well-rested. They've got lots of confidence. They're able to watch any team they want right now because they've proceeded so quickly over the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. But it's the Red Wings, and they have the advantage in almost every area. Maybe the goaltending is a little bit stronger as far as Jimmy Howard versus Corey Crawford straight up. But Corey Crawford's been really good. His numbers were great, and he got the job done. Whatever you want to say, he got the job done.
Television-wise, I'm not talking about late games and such, just overall, I think hockey fans would want to see Anaheim win because Anaheim-LA would be... I watched them play a couple times this year. That would be an awesome, mean, skilled series. And Chicago-San Jose would be a far better series than Chicago-Detroit. Because and then San Jose LA would be good, but I hope Anaheim wins just for the theater of those two matchups.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the LA Kings. We know that they're into the second round, and it's going to be a battle of California regardless.
Yeah.
They're either going to play Anaheim. I think the travel between LA and Anaheim will be okay for them.
About 20-minute drive.
About that. Yeah. Or they're going to play San Jose. Who do the Los Angeles Kings prefer to play?
That's a really hard one. I'd say probably San Jose, just because the Anaheim game breakers can probably cause more trouble. Getzlaff, I just wouldn't want to play against Getzlaff. I know Perry struggled and Ryan. I wouldn't want to play against those guys. Then, as opposed to San Jose, which I know Couture and obviously Pavelski, and Pavelski's been a really good playoff player, and Couture's really good. But I mean Thornton and guys like that. I mean they've faded in the big moments before, so. Overall, and to be honest, I mean, both defenses, I think, are questionable in terms of top playoff teams. So, I think Adams is probably a little bit, they're probably both questionable. They're probably pretty similar. So, I would say want to not play Anaheim, but it's pretty close.
If Anaheim beats Detroit tomorrow, we know that Chicago will then have to play San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an advantage will it be to the winner of the Kings-Ducks series that their travel is so minimal as opposed to the Blackhawks-Sharks series where their travel is, you know, 2 or 3 hours to the West Coast and then back to the Central Time Zone?
Depends on the amount of games played. If they play the same amount of games, it's going to be an advantage, although that series will be pretty physical. Not that Chicago-San Jose won't, but that one, LA-Anaheim, would be more physical. But if they play a 7-game physical series and it's a 5-game series for Chicago, then the travel will be, I think, negated.
Absolutely. We saw it in the series between the LA Kings and the St. Louis Blues. It was a physical series. The LA Kings are a physical series. That's why they're so successful top to bottom. They can get the job done. And regardless of which California matchup there is, it's going to be a battle. And it's going to be very good. Richie mentioned the TV aspect of it. It's going to be very good TV for whatever series it is. And I would probably lean towards San Jose as well, Richie, because I think that Anaheim is the deeper team. Yeah, they're the second seed, but they really are a deeper team with more game breakers. And we've seen that even without Corey Perry scoring, you've got youth on the team that has got the job done in Emerson Edom and Kyle Palmieri and even Matt Beleski. Both teams are very good, and it will be a close series. But the LA Kings, I really think, found their stride at home after dropping those first two games. And I do think that they pose the biggest challenge for the Chicago Blackhawks in order to get back to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I really do think there's a good chance that we will see 4 Stanley Cup winners in the Final Four. I think you might see Pittsburgh, Boston, and Chicago, LA, and I think it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, awesome.
Because you're really going to see what team is the best team out of the last 5 years. You're going to see those 4 previous winners battle, and I really do think that it's a good possibility you'll see that.
That'd be awesome.
Those TV ratings would just be gargantuan.
It'll be incredible.
I mean, that would be very entertaining if you could sort of see, you're right, of the best of the last half decade or so.
Yeah.
That would be really fun for the NHL. A quick update: we talked about the Pittsburgh Islanders series.
Somebody score already?
No, nobody scored yet. Franz Nielsen is a game time decision for tonight's game for the Islanders.
Got to play.
If he doesn't play, it sounds like rookie Brock Nelson will be his replacement. Right.
Brock Nelson was a UND guy.
Yep, we saw him play.
He's a left winger.
Yep.
He's a big boy, and he's talented,
yep.
But it's a lot of pressure to be thrown into a NHL playoff game against the likes of Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and to replace a guy like Franz Nielsen, who's really utilized in all situations. As much as I like Brock Nelson as a prospect, I believe he was their first-round pick 2 years ago. Number 29, is that what number he was?
Sounds close to correct if it's not correct.
But it's a different position. He just serves different role than does Franz Nielsen. I don't think that the Islanders can overcome that loss for that game.
I don't think he even played that much in the regular season. Franz Nielsen is very important. He's kind of been the quarterback of that second line, and Okposo has been great. I think if anything comes out of the way the Islanders have played, in addition to Tavares being incredible, we already knew he was incredible, Hart Trophy candidate and all that, but Kyle Okposo has been really good, dominant physically. The future is really bright there, but Richie touched on it. Franz Nielsen plays in all situations. He's a defensive forward. You know, you're talking about defensive responsibilities in addition to offensive responsibilities. So when you throw in Andrew McDonald's injury on defense, now you're talking about the Islanders being decimated by injuries.
He's listed as a center here in Hockey DB. I don't remember. I thought he was a winger, but in any event, he was really impressive. And this year in Bridgeport, he had 52 points in 66 games. Yeah. So we know he's offensively talented. He's got a good shot, but that's a tall task.
But the Penguins, as Remus knows by selecting the song, are explosive.
I just like the fact that the Islanders are going to have a straight, a strite, and eventually a Nielsen, a Nelson, and a Nilsson all on the same roster.
Well, we always know what to expect out of you, Drew. You're a straight shooter.
Let's go to break.
And he deserves a full Nielsen.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Curve Hockey Show, one final segment for this Saturday afternoon. You know it, you love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for the first round of the NHL playoffs. I'll start with this question. Who was the most disappointing player in the first round of the NHL playoffs?
The Sedin Twins. It's one player.
That's fine.
Yeah, I know they got some points.
They're one entity.
They didn't score, Drew. Their team went out with a whimper. You're the captain. You command this team. You were in the Cup final 2 years ago. They disappointed. To me, they were the most disappointing.
It's tough to not go with the Sedins the way they played. And we talked about Mikko Koivu. He was disappointing. Yeah. I'm going to go with David Backes on the St. Louis Blues. I really like David Backes' game. I really do think that he's a strong power forward, a good two-way type. But he just didn't bring an offensive element in that series. And when you're talking about the core of that team, and you can throw in TJ Oshie in there, you can throw in Patrick Berglund, they didn't necessarily not play that well, but they didn't finish. And they count on those guys for goals. And I really do think that Backes was disappointing for me because I thought that series, even though it went to six games, I thought it would be closer than it really was.
Yeah, him and Kessler both did a lot of talking. And I thought that maybe Kessler that period was great.
Kessler wasn't disappointing
in that game. But they both did a lot of talking. Must win game, gut check time. And then every time they said that, their team didn't react. Yep. So what's the deal?
Okay. Trade deadline acquisition with the greatest first round impact.
You know, Drew, I mean, again, last side, he's been great, but I mean, and he's at, I think, seven assists now. Brassard, to me, has been the biggest impact. I mean, look what he's done for the Rangers. He's leading them in scoring. He's providing a passing element there. He can play on the half boards, on the power play. He's creating, he's giving them depth. To me, he's had the biggest impact.
Yeah, it's tough to not go with Derek Brassard, but I'm going to come up with my own answers here.
That's good. I hope so.
I think I'm going to go with Corey Conacher. He hasn't lit it up, but he's been consistent. He's had a few goals, and he was acquired for Ben Bishop, and he's provided the Ottawa Senators with some secondary offense. So I'm going to go with Corey Conacher. I liked the trade at the time, and it's paying off.
Most overblown story of the first round.
Well, Drew, I have to say Paul McLean's timeout. The Montreal Canadiens were being jokers out there. And Paul McLean's allowed to call a timeout. You know, you can't say the guy's not being classy after your team completely loses its mind. And he calls a timeout, and then that's a huge issue. I think Montreal media was trying to make it more of an issue than it actually was.
For my overblown story, I don't know if it's necessarily a story, but it is definitely a part of the narrative. It's the face-offs. I think face-offs are extremely important in hockey. They really are. They determine possession. Defensive zone faceoffs are very important. And PJ Stock was giving Elliot Friedman a hard time on Hockey Night in Canada. We've had both of those guys on NHL Midweek and Illegal Curve. But Elliot Friedman was making a joke about how the LA Kings were dominant in the faceoff circle, and it was, you know, 54%, I think it was. And PJ Stock was joking. 54%. I mean, that's not that far away from 50%. And I think it has gotten a little bit out of control with the fixation on faceoffs. let's be honest, face-offs are an element of someone's game. And if someone's good on face-offs, it's important. But there are a lot of other things that go on in a hockey game. Individual battles, momentum, goaltending, defensive matchups. Face-offs are a part of hockey. They're a small part of... small but significant part of hockey. But when you're breaking down how important face-offs are on the overall outcome of a game, it's less than 50%. It's not anywhere near 50%, actually. So I think face-offs have almost become too much of the narrative of the way a series ends up playing itself out.
When I used to write for Hockey Perspectives, I did an article on the correlation between winning and face-off percentage. And there is a fairly strong correlation between the two. But I agree with Ezzy in that it is quantifiable, so people rely on it more than the things that are not quantifiable.
Best first-round coaching performance?
I think Paul McLean hands down, Drew. There have been some good ones. But, I mean, wow. Getting his team to not only beat Montreal, the number two seed, but beat him in five. Move his guys into the lineup who've been injured seamlessly. Get Greiba in there. Obviously, there was an incident, but get Greiba back in there. Tapping on Corey Conacher, Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail wrote, had two shifts in that game, in game four. Two shifts in the third period, tapped on him, scored. Just has that intuition about him. He's done a masterful job. To me, 100%.
And I would probably take Paul McLean as well, but because we're trying to give different answers, I'm going to go with Todd McClellan. I think he did a really good job in that series. He had the San Jose Sharks playing at a high level. They went into Vancouver, stole both games, swept the Vancouver Canucks, and really had put confidence in his guys and really played his guys well. And with the exception of maybe a few players, Martin Havlat being one of them, didn't play that well. But I thought Todd McClellan did a really good job. I think he's done a really good job of coaching Brent Burns in his transition from forward to D.
Yes.
I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done so far in the playoffs.
A little bit quicker now. Best series of the first round.
Detroit-Anaheim. Back and forth. Overtime. Four overtimes out of six. Crazy pace. Good skating. Good skill level.
I'm going to go with LA-St. Louis. We didn't get a seventh game, but I thought that series was really good. We had some overtime, and when you've got Dustin Brown and Anje Kopitar combining for only one goal, and they still won, I think that shows you the depth that they've got.
MVP of the first round.
Jonathan Quick, Drew. I mean, how good was this guy? I know he had the turnover in game one, but he was ridiculous in game one, too. Jonathan Quick is right now the best goalie in the National Hockey League at this moment in time, and that's the most important time to be the best goalie in the National Hockey League, although Craig Anderson might have something to say about that.
Ugh. The first round, we still have four series left, so it's tough. It's tough. Again, Richie's pick is a really good one. You know what? I'm going to go with Logan Couture on the San Jose Sharks.
Great.
And the final one is Stanley Cup favorite at the conclusion of the first round.
At the outset of our predictions, I took the Kings, and that's kind of a off, you know, a little bit. Everybody had Chicago, Pittsburgh, so I'm going to stick with my pick. I don't want to change just yet. If they were out, I'd change.
And again, I got to stick with my pick. Chicago got rid of the Minnesota Wild in five games. I still think they are the favorite, and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane didn't really produce that much offensively, and they still won. So I think I'm going to stick with those guys, and I think the next round is going to be a bigger challenge for them. But I'm gonna stick with the Hawks.
Remus, the biggest letdown of round one was you missing that cue.
I hit the button. It didn't go. Oh. It's something with the computer. I swear. Oh.
Cheers. This didn't work. We're gonna make you do the sound.
He's brilliant.
He's a good
personally.
Guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
I've said it before, he doesn't make those mistakes when he's on with Rick Ralph.
That's true.
Never makes those mistakes.
It's the computer. What do you want?
It's always the computer.
The computer doesn't screw up when it's Rick, and it's the same computer.
Richard, cheers or jeers besides jeering Remus?
I'm jeering diving. I mean, do we need to have David Stern...
like synchronized diving?
Yeah, it's synchronized diving, you know, non-synchronized diving. No, but I want to jeer diving, and do we need some kind of a rule in terms of diving like the NBA has in terms of fining? I think it's an epidemic, guys.
Yep.
You watch games now, and there's at least 10 to 15 dives a game, and I'm not exaggerating. Enough's enough.
Yeah, you shouldn't dive. Kids out there, don't dive unless it's on a diving board. I usually cheer, Drew, but I'm going to jeer. The delay of game penalty when it tips off of a stick, and... I think that when a guy, pardon me, when that's not what I meant. I meant when a guy knocks the puck out of the air with a stick. That's what I meant to say. I think that that should be the exception to the rule, and it's been called a couple times in the playoffs, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by going a little bit off the board and going to the World Hockey Championships in Helsinki and in Stockholm. I'm going to cheer Team France, as they're not known for their hockey history, but they defeated Team Russia on Thursday at the World Hockey Championships.
Is that because you ate a baguette over breakfast?
That's right. I had a baguette, so I feel feeling very French right now. And then I'm going to have a croissant a little bit later. And then later,
don't forget
French,
poutine.
French toast, just to wrap it all up. So anyways, Team France defeated Team Russia, so good on them. Damien Fleury and Thomas Roussel were the goal scorers for France.
Are they actually French, though? Are they from Canada, and they visited France 3 years ago on a trip?
Probably, yeah, exactly. Anyways, good for them. They beat Team Russia in the World Hockey
Championship. Felicitacion, Drew.
Yeah. Ezzy, you're going to be in Little France, Montreal next week.
I'll be in Montreal walking down St. Urbain Street, as you know, is a famous street immortalized by Mordecai Richler, Drew. I'll be in Montreal, and I won't be here next week. I get a week off. It's a nice little
festive
thing for me, so you guys will hold it down and do a good job.
Remus, you're going to be a little bit more included next week.
Yeah, you're not bringing Dave from IllegalCurve.com in?
We'll see what his status is in the bullpen. I know he was tired from his last trip from the bullpen at the Shaw Park.
Yeah.
That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. A big thank you to our guests in today's program, Al Strachan, the Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, and Jesse Rogers from ESPNChicago.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download both on iTunes and on the TSN1290.ca website. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.